You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong. Wanna turn right, but you turn all the way left.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Glad we're here. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we are looking forward to a delightful and enlightening conversation today. I'll ask our guest, would you please introduce yourself to us?
Good morning. Good afternoon to you. So good morning for us. Yate shei nas ezitapaha ado nakadana bashishin kislichini dashiche ado shidashanala. My name is Daryl Marks, and I am currently the academic advisor for Native American students here in Flagstaff, Arizona, at Flagstaff High School.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to our show. I'm so pleased you're here, and thank you so much for the work you're doing on behalf of our Earth and our youth.
And thank you. It is an honor, and I'm humbled to be able to do the work that we're doing here. We've had an opportunity in a number of situations, number of cases, to be able to not only work to, you know, advocate and maintain our responsibility as good stewards to the land, but also, you know, provide guidance and support for our young people who are also looking for that relationship and to enhance that opportunity in their lives to be able to be good advocates and good stewards of the land as well.
Mm, how beautiful. I love the word stewards when it comes to talking about land, water, air. What does that mean to you?
Well, for me, it certainly carries that understanding, that notion that, you know, we don't have ownership of the land. And much like all of our other relatives, you know, the animals and the trees and other elements, that we get to navigate our relationship with Mother Earth, with nature itself, and work through that relationship responsibly. So being a steward gives us the opportunity to, you know, advocate, recognize some of our flaws and things that we might be doing inappropriately with nature,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, definitely finding a way to, you know, continue to take care of the earth and take care of ourselves as we, you know, explore, navigate, and live through that experience of our relationship with earth and the environments that we exist in. Because ultimately, we know Mother Earth will take care of herself,
mm-hmm.
but we have to recognize that in our relationship or in our continued existence on Earth, that we have to, you know, be responsible as well and be intentful in our practices and how we live and what we do. And so knowing that our actions and how we live our lives, how we consume certain, how we consume and how we utilize Mother Earth's resources definitely is something that we have to be more responsible for and more mindful of as we continue to exist on this earth, so that we can continue to exist on this earth.
When we talk about mindfulness, we're not talking about something esoteric that's just, you know, wow, we feel good about the earth. We love Mother Earth. What practical steps can we take in our lives?
Well, practical steps, most importantly, I think, would be like our consumption. What are we really using and how are we using it?
Mm-hmm.
And then how much of that are we using? You know, my community, of course, here in the Southwest, we have, you know, a reverence and a reliability, a reliance on water.
Mm-hmm.
And its scarcity here only continues to worsen. And, you know, we have to be mindful of how are we using our water and what are we using it for? And, you know, here in the Flagstaff area, and I'm thinking about how our environment differs from the rest of the state of Arizona. I mean, we're in a mountainous range here. We have a large mountain here, Tocosli, or often commonly referred to as the San Francisco Peaks, that, you know, protrudes itself, you know, high into the environment here, and has a unique biosphere, unique climate, and even just a unique life supporting system that is different than the rest of Arizona and different from much of the Southwest. And we depend on water, but also this mountain gives and provides a lot of that, those resources for us to have a sustainable living here. And unfortunately, there are abuses that are taking place on the mountain and have continued to be practiced and continued by, you know, corporations and entities that only seek to create a recreation or utilize the mountain as a commodity rather than as like something that should be sustained and should be respected and appreciated. And, you know, I reference like our one particular entity, which is like Snowbowl, which is a ski resort, and they're using reclaimed water on the mountain, but they're also growing in size and taking more dominance on the mountain. So we're losing a lot of plants and the natural habitats for our animals on that mountain. And the use of reclaimed water is toxifying and polluting, you know, not only our surface water, but our groundwater, and is damaging the plants and is, of course, impacting our wildlife and soon, if not already, impacting us as human beings in this area. And we're continuing to advocate that stop. You know, I come from a culture that as Navajo, we look at this mountain and we see it as a female entity. And we have a reverence being a matriarchal society for our women. And looking at the abuses that are taking place on our mother, this mountain, I see a correlation to how society, Western society especially, commodifies and exploits and uses our women as a resource. There's not the same respect and regard for women that some men can afford, and that's unfortunate. It really is, because I feel like we're teaching our children, we're teaching our society something by commodifying and saying that this mountain is there as a recreation or something that we can find pleasure in, you know, whether that's skiing or, you know, just continuing to take advantage of that space without any consequence or recourse, or even just consciously recognizing that if we continue to abuse this mountain and abuse our environment the way that we are, the environment's not going to be there for us in the future. And we can't continue to keep living in the present and without understanding and recognizing the consequences of how this could impact our future. And myself as a father, knowing that my children were born here, and the environment has changed even in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that this continues to happen to a mountain that's sacred to us, that's within our own, our prayers and our ceremonies, that is, again, a beacon of hope to see this abuse taking place hurt. Because for being hurt for profit and being hurt without any real desire to understand that we need this mountain. This mountain has always been there for us, and we should always be there for the mountain. We should always be there to advocate for the mountain. But unfortunately, you know, if this abuse continues, we won't have those medicines there. We won't have those animals that we rely on. And we definitely won't have a continued support for the ecosystem that this mountain provides. If we keep cutting down trees, if we keep removing, you know, this resource, and removing all of these elements that help provide this unique climate for us here in Flagstaff and here in the northern part of Arizona.
Wow, there is so much, such humility and such grace in what you're saying. And there's another aspect of what you're talking about that's really important to me personally.
Yeah.
You're talking about being a good steward of our environment, and as an environmental advocate, that's wonderful. But you're connecting that with our future generations and our youth and our children and our young people. Are we stewards of their lives as well?
I certainly hope people see that truth. I mean, we are not only of their lives, but of their children's lives.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be mindful and intentful in our practices, in our way of living, the choices that we make, the things that we do, and how we consume. Because we're teaching them, we're providing a history for them to reflect on, to learn from, to be guided by. Our words become their prayers. And if we're not saying the right things, we're only misguiding them.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope and pray that more people see that, you know, that we are those stewards, that we are those models, we are the future ancestor for our children's children. And we should be making better choices with how we live our lives and what we do, especially with how we're taking care of the environment.
Mm-hmm. What do we do to become good ancestors?
Well, there's a number of things that we can do to start with. One, as I shared before, how do we consume? How do we exist? What are the things that we're doing with our time, with our breath?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we definitely have the opportunities in front of us to be greater advocates for the things that truly matter, the things that not just impact us right now, but mm-hmm. definitely impact our future generation.
Yes.
And we have to think about those future generations with the choices that we make. You know, I come from a community and I come from a family where my elders have always said, you do for yourself, but not saying for me as an individual, but what choices I make, what choices that I participate in impact all of my family. So they're saying, do for yourself. Like, what are you doing to all of us? What are you doing for all of us?
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you doing for your children's children? And they would tell me these things when I was a child myself. Never once thinking like, oh, I'm going to be a father, or I'm going to be a grandfather, or I'm going to be a great-grandfather one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so having them speak with that purpose, that intent, with that kind of dialogue was really formative. And so we have to learn to do the same. We live in a society where everything is is consumable. Everything is almost instant. And we do things for self-gratification, whether that's, I don't know, even like a social media post. We talk about ourselves, which isn't always a bad thing. But if that's our only focus, then we're going down the wrong path. We have to think about, what are we saying? What are we putting into propriety that our children and their children will pull out or pull forward or bring to the surface in their lives? And how are we guiding them? So there's a lot of opportunities for us to get involved in our school environment. What are our students learning, and how are we providing the right kind of curriculum for them? What elements are we including, and what are we purposefully excluding? And I think about that because I work in a school system, and I work with a lot of Native American students, and many of them are looking for themselves in what they're learning. Mm-hmm. And what they hear most often than not is that they are history, not the present and not the future. That the lessons that they hear from their grandparents and their elder and their communities aren't supported and not renewed in their learning in school. So we push to make sure that those things are advocated for. We push to make sure that what their elders have spoken about in regards to sustainability, to their own carbon imprint, their own understanding of nature, the cosmos, and how that reflects in story, in history, in science, in math, even in culinary or building. There's so much richness from our people and the way that they've lived that was sustainable, that they gave them the supports needed to exist for thousands and thousands of years on this continent. And that's being ignored, or that's being overlooked. And there's an opportunity for us to advocate for that, to bring that to the forefront and incorporate that into our learning and our knowledge base within our schools, within our classrooms, so that our students feel supported in that, in carrying over the knowledge, so that they don't have to live in two worlds. One world experience that they have at home with their elders and their family, and a different one that they have in Western society and then their school. There's a way to merge that. There's a way to bring that all together, and there's no greater time than now to do such, because we're having these conversations about renewable energies. We're having these conversations about these impacts on our environment and climate change, and how we have to make a change with the way that we live our lives, so that there'll be a future generation and a world for that future generation to live in. And we don't stop there with our schools. We have to get out in our communities and advocate. We have to get out in our communities and support and be present. That, whether that means going out and participating or influencing and encouraging our council people, our city governments, our tribal governments, our federal and state governments to carry forward that message, to be responsible representatives of this need, to not think about the generation that's voting for them, the generation that will inherit the responsibilities, will inherit the consequences of their choice. And so that sounds like a lot, but if we look at the examples that our elder and even our ancestor presented for us, whether that was fighting for the spaces that they lived and exist to continue to live and exist and breathe, to navigating the challenges of land loss, resource extraction, boarding schools, treaties, and so on, they continue to be resilient. They continue to be humble. they continue to have hope, and they continue to just be strong and continue to pass on these teachings and empower us and hope that we would maintain that responsibility and that same resiliency that they inherited themselves. So we have to keep doing that. And I think if we remember who we are and where we come from and find ways to continue to celebrate that or carry on ways to celebrate that, we give hope to our children who are so, they've inherited such a struggle. They've inherited these challenges in their lives that make them question whether or not life is worth living. To question what light can they bring to the world if we're only facing despair. And we have to find a way to bring back that light, bring back that hope, give them some assurances and give them some guidance. But definitely, most definitely, remember to follow the example of our ancestor and our elder who had hope, who struggled through some very challenging times, but found ways to continue to exist and continue to celebrate that existence, to be responsible and maintain a sustainable, responsible, respectful relationship with each other and with Mother Earth herself. And we just got to keep advocating, use the breath while we have it, to speak intention, speak words of wisdom, speak hope into the world, and find ways to continue to listen to our children and what they need. Even when they're not speaking, they're still crying for that assistance, crying for that support for us to be good parents, good stewards, good relatives.
So beautiful, truly beyond beautiful, the words that you're saying and speaking, and I want to make sure that we do dive deeper into them. School is in the headlines lately. You know, people are rethinking schools in a lot of ways, how we teach and where we teach and who teaches, and, you know, all of those things are really being reconsidered because of so many, you know, school shootings and the pandemic and just all kinds of things. You know, even the free preschool proposition. All of these things are making us reconsider schools. And I am fascinated by your approach to education, especially with a cultural aspect. You know, I'm a full-time stay-at-home mom now, but a lot of my career I taught at the university level. I taught Indigenous studies, Native studies, and I was always amazed how many people got all the way to me in college and never had any interaction with Native American anything for, you know, K through 12. Then I was also amazed at how many people, my Indigenous students, my Native students, were just relieved to get in a class where they were validated.
Yeah.
So help us with that as we go forward and reimagine schools and curriculum and all of that. You know, when I wrote curriculum, one of the things I wanted was cultural saturation. In other words, put the Aztecs in your math unit, put the Incas in your agriculture and science unit, do these things as part of just everything else, make them unmissable, right? Cultural saturation, just put it in with it. When we're talking about literature, put these books in along with the other books you're going to teach, not just over here is our giving November Native American Month curriculum or a class that you take at college that most people will not take. So how do we work with this now? We have an open door. Schools are being reimagined. Curriculum is being redeveloped. We're taking looks at how we educate. So this is our moment. What do we do with it?
Well, I wish I knew the definitive answer for that, right? But what we've tried to do here and what we continue to advocate for here in our learning spaces, not only at our school but within our district, is, you know, we've asked for that saturation. We've asked for that inclusion. We've asked for that opportunity to create a meaningful, sustainable, and responsible foundation of learning by bringing forward cultural understandings, by bringing forward the contributions to mathematics, science, social studies, history, and so forth to so many different aspects. One of the things that we've done is that we know in some of our science classes and biology classes, they participate in animal dissection. Well, culturally, many Indigenous people and many other communities of color and other belief systems can't participate in that.
That's right, absolutely.
Simply because it could be a desecration of life.
That's right.
And so what we've done here, we've been doing this for the last 6 years, is going into those classrooms and saying, rather than give your students an alternative paper assignment that is not an equivalent, doesn't support that learning because they don't want to participate or they're not able to participate in an animal dissection, is let's find a way that they can engage in that material. And so we have in our own home communities the practice of preparing an animal for consumption. And most often in our own communities, we refer to it as a butchering. And unfortunately, there's language context to that. It creates imagery. Now, I come from a hunting community, and we hear of the hunters that say that they've tagged a deer and they've quartered the animal. And then we go back to the Indigenous and we look at, oh, we butchered an animal. And it just creates this imagery. So we go in and we purposely are using language in a way where we're saying we're preparing that animal for consumption. And we've invited our science classes, their teachers, even from the university, to participate in an animal preparation. We've invited an elder in our community who's raised the animal, who knows of that animal's history, what the animal's been eating, you know, how old it is, who its parents are. And then they get to speak about why they do that, why they raise that animal, and how long they've been doing it, to, you know, support how our community, our peoples have maintained a lifestyle, have continued to exist and live in a sustainable way for hundreds of years. And so they've spoken about that. They bring the animal forward. They talk about consent. They ask for permission of the animal to give its life so that they can provide nutrition and to the community. Then the community can then in return be responsible and reciprocate by maintaining a healthy relationship with that animal's relative, with that animal's family. And so as we're going through this practice, what always happens is these young people who are familiar with the animal preparation in their homes or in their own communities will come forward and say, can I help? And then they even take on leadership and they start instructing their own science teachers. This is this. This is how you do this part. This body part is this. It serves this function. There's this medicine that comes from this. This is how we use every little bit of the animal in this way, and this is how it's prepared. And it's magical because it not only supports that student's learning, and it's giving them application to what they might be learning and what they should be learning in those science classes, but it's building on this relationship of community, looking to the elder for guidance, and then supporting that elder. And giving us as the educators the opportunity to listen and learn, to be students ourselves of our own students. And as I shared, you know, the elder and the community, we get to talk about the carbon imprint. We get to talk about our relationship to animals and to food. And we also get to talk about where this animal comes from versus what we normally might consume if we go to the grocery store. We have to talk about Where did that animal come from?
Mm-hmm.
How far did it travel? And how was it prepared? Then we could even go further and deeper into the economics. How much did it cost to raise this animal versus how much per pound you're paying for that other animal? At the store, when you go to the restaurant and you order something, where is that coming from? How was that prepared? What is the chemistry? What is happening to the biology of that animal when that animal's life is taken? Most often it's from like a slaughterhouse. Versus what we've done here, when we're asking for consent, when we're asking for permission of this animal, we're given these building blocks that we can apply in our lives, asking for consent of other people, asking for permission of other people before we engage. Can I shake your hand?
Mm-hmm.
Can you do this? Can we be in this relationship, right? And so we get all of these opportunities to engage in these conversations, and then we go even further than that, beyond the stories of how long we've existed, beyond the history, beyond the math, beyond the economics. We dive in deeper to the relationships and the commonalities that we might share with other people. So we've had individuals that have come from the universities that said, well, I'm from this village in Africa, or I'm from this community in Turkey, or I am of this other tribe here in our area. And we do this similar, or we do this differently. We call this something separately, and we often, you know, engage in it in another manner.
Mm-hmm.
We have conversation. We have a relationship that's not only established, but supported and nurtured and fostered. And then the students get to prepare the food, and then they get to share with everyone else who's there. They give back to the elder who provided the animal. They give back to their classmates that are participating there, and then they take that food, and then they go and prepare it in their culinary classes. And then whatever's not consumed in those culinary classes or from that event, they take it out, and we share it with our unsheltered in our community to remind ourselves they're our relatives too.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we be better humans by taking care of one another? So all of that from one act of preparing food, and we get to expand on that throughout all of our classes, and we get to go beyond that by bringing other things forward, by bringing lessons of how we engage with our mathematics, like you had shared, right? We get to talk about our own home structures and the complicated math that goes into those home structures, but why those home structures are set in such a way, how it's related to us in our customs and our culture, in our cosmology, in all of these different aspects of our being, how one hand is over the other, how everything's interwoven.
Mm-hmm.
And how rich it is just from our own home, just from our own ways of preparing food. And then we could dive even deeper and take it even further into the psychology, the philosophy, and beyond. And so if we can influence our education in that way, why are we preparing food rather than participating in animal dissection? Well, we respect life. And if we can respect the life of something that we consume,
mm-hmm.
then we should be respecting the life of those that we live with, right? Our mm-hmm. neighbors, our brothers and sisters, our community, humans. And we start to recognize just how important that relationship is, and how we're a cog, or how we're a spoke within that whole cycle of life, that understanding and recognition of where we exist in the world. And hopefully through that practice, more people are seeing we're not so different. We might have different skin tones. We might be from different communities, different continents, different languages, but we're all still five-fingered beings. And we all share this space, and we can continue to share these spaces. and do it responsibly, do it respectfully, and do it appropriately. And those
wow.
are the lessons that we should be teaching our children.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts in our school. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, it's truly awesome. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come right back and enjoy much more of this thoughtful and insightful conversation.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees, they pray hard, they pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave you.
Millions retire online so they can do what they want offline. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with a Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit IRS.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
I need to do my taxes. Are there any self-help options online?
Doing taxes yourself? IRS.gov has many self-service tax tools, and they're all just a click away. Prepare and file your taxes online using FreeFile. Use our calculator to estimate your tax withholding. Order a tax transcript. Apply for an employer identification number. Check your refund status too. IRS.gov, your 24/7 federal tax resource.
Hey, I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Would it be crazy if you packed your bags and left? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees, they pray hard, and never look back once the world forgave you.
I'm so glad we're back. And I'm so glad we have our guest here with us today. Would you reintroduce yourself to us, please?
Yes. Shane as Estepa, Oro Nakaida Nabash Chin Kitini Dashte, Ado Ashin Dashanala. My name is Daryl Marks. I'm an academic advisor here in Flagstaff, Arizona, at one of our high schools, and I am of the Diné, the Navajo people.
We are so grateful to have you with us today, truly, to share the richness of what you know. And I want to make sure that we talk about parenting as well,
mm-hmm.
because parenting during a pandemic has been quite an adventure, you know,
yes.
but it's not the first time that people of color, indigenous people, have had to do that.
Indeed.
So I want us to talk about parenting, and I would like to start by asking your opinion about a subject that's truly near and dear to my heart, and I get a lot of questions about it. Hair. Our baby has beautiful long hair, and mm-hmm. he has a braid, and we love his hair. He loves his hair. And we have a lot of folks who ask us about Indigenous people and hair. So I thought I'd ask you to help us as parents of boys with braids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can help us to as we raise our sons.
Well, you know, I have the blessing of being a parent myself and having young men in my family. With my children, it was really something that I learned from them, that I should have paid more attention to as a child from my grandparents. So I hear my grandparents used to tell us about how our hair contains memory and how the only time we ever cut our hair is when we are in mourning. And they would speak of the experiences that they had or their children had in boarding school. And they would talk about the trauma that was inflicted because of that action of cutting hair. Mm. How some of those young people who knew that their hair contained memories, and the only time you ever cut your hair is when there's when you're in mourning and there's loss in your family, to step into a learning space where you didn't understand the language, you didn't understand the customs, and you didn't understand why you were there, but you knew that your family wasn't with you. And then they started cutting your hair.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a little, but a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And can't imagine what they were experiencing, but I heard from my grandparents, they often thought, they're cutting my hair so short, that must mean nobody in my family is alive. Mm-hmm. That I'm now here on this planet all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to live the rest of my life without my family. How hard that must be, because especially during COVID, we've had a lot of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are recognizing how important it is to have people in your life, living, breathing. And when they're removed or when they leave, how hard that is.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine being a child, not understanding the language, the custom or the culture, the people that you're living with, having that one understanding be present. And so, you know, we recognize and understand as Navajo people that our hair contains our memory. I've had my elders say that, you know, you take a strand of your hair and somebody can tell, you know, who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And science supports all of that. Can tell you what you've been eating, how much sleep you've been getting, what you've been consuming, if you've been smoking certain things or drinking certain things that maybe you shouldn't, or and even recognizing and understanding that our hair, you know, tells us just how well we're taking care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
All within our hair, and on top of that, you know, there's DNA in that, and they could replicate and duplicate you as an individual, as a human. And so, you know, recognizing that not only does our hair contain those memories and our thoughts, I think about, you know, the lesson that my grandparents tried to teach me, and I would instruct my children, hey, take care of your hair, brush your hair, fix your hair, you know, take care of it, because grandma used to say this. And my children were listening with new ears.
Mm-hmm.
Listening with very purposeful intent, and hearing that they shouldn't cut their hair, hearing that the very tips of their hair would contain their earliest memory. So I often look back at my children who are much older now and have hair down to their knees. Had I not cut their hair, the very tips of their hair would have told them the story, would have contained the memories of when they first learned how to walk,
mm-hmm.
when they first learned how to talk, their first laugh,
mm-hmm.
their first days of school. Any of those things could have been contained at the tips of their hair, and they would have been able to speak from that, physically be able to pull those memories forward and say to the world, this is when I learned how to walk. This is when I learned how to talk, right? And this mm-hmm. is when I became who I am. And this is what's guided me and protected me and supported me and secured me as an individual, as a human being, to be who I am, to embody that teaching that my elders have passed on. Because that's what they're able to do now. And I think about, had I only been a better parent when they were children, had I only listened to my grandparents, and actually applied it.
Mm-hmm.
My parenting would have been so much easier, but also I could have been that much more supportive of the mental and emotional well-being as well as the spiritual well-being of my children by being intentful with their physical well-being. And so there's so much that we can learn, and it opens so many doors, recognizing and understanding how we take care of our hair, Mm-hmm. Because it's reflected in how we take care of ourselves. It's reflected in how well we take care of our feet, even.
Mm-hmm.
How we manage and maintain our responsibility and respect for our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And how we use our hands in the world. And what we use our hands for. And those teachings that start with how we take care of our hair also carry forward in how we engage with other people. When I talk about our hands, I'm also thinking about, you know, the ways that we engage with other human beings. Do we hit other people? No, because we don't want other people hitting us. Or, you know, my community, we talk about how, like, if you pat your child on the head, you're stunting their growth. And, you know, we think about just that simple act of how we use our hands.
Mm-hmm.
That you are so, that anybody's capable of violence if you're not careful with how you interact with your body, right? And that violence could be, you know, perpetuated on another human being, could be perpetuated on Mother Earth. So we have to be reflective and responsible how we use our hands. We talk about in Navajo, there's a spiral on the top of our head that when we emerged into the world, when we crowned, the first thing that came into the world was that top of our head where the spiral now exists. That the breath of life was given to us, that gave us the ability to talk, cry, and speak out. But also as that breath, like a whirlwind, passed through our body, that created that spiral at the top of our heads, that it also gave us those spirals on our fingertips and on our toes. And so we don't tap, we don't pat, we don't close off that top of our head, right? We don't do that to our children. And we shouldn't do the same thing with their hands. We don't slap the bottom of their feet, right? Because we don't want to reflect, you know, or impact how they walk in the world. And we hope that, you know, they continue to grow as human beings and they recognize just how important their feet are, where they're walking and where they're walking.
Mm-hmm.
With what purpose and what intent. How they're engaging in the universe with their hands. How they carry that relationship in their hands and who they engage with and how they engage with those people or those entities with their hands, with their mind, with their feet, with their being, with their presence, with their existence. And so our hair is so important in teaching our young people to be responsible for that. Teaching the rest of the world to be responsible with our children, to be responsible to that knowledge that they now possess. They can't ignore that the science, what science has also proven to them, that our hair is important. Our hair contains memory. Our hair provides this understanding and this guidance that we should reflect in our day-to-day, everyday lives.
Hmm. That's marvelous. And so, as a parent, and you have marvelous children, right? Marvelous young men. What do you want other parents to know? You know, what do you know now that you share with other parents today?
Hmm. There's so much in that, because I now, with children that are becoming their own adults,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could go back and redo so many things. I wish I could have another child to do it right the first time. But what I would encourage is that you celebrate your children to the fullest. You listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You maintain contact with them, like physical, mental, emotional, spiritual contact. You truly engage in their being. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and my oldest son came up and they ask, oh, what is the most important thing that you could say about your relationship with your parent, with your father? And he said, my dad's done a lot of things. He's been an example. But knowing that he's always there, and my son reached out and held my hand, and he said, my father's always held me.
Mm-hmm.
When he was happy, when he was celebrating something, or when he was sad, and when I was happy, when I was sad, and when I was going through something, he was always holding me and letting me know he was there, letting me know that he loved me.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he was born, holding him, saying, hope, and I pray that I don't break this one. Don't do the wrong things, please.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always listening to my elders saying that, you know, when your children go through life, you massage them so that they can grow. You give them a part of you so that they take the better part of you and hopefully make it better, hopefully use that as guidance, as tool. And so I wish I would have listened to my grandparents more intently as a child so that I could be a better parent and could have been a better parent to my children when they were young. I dedicated and spent a lot of time in their classroom, in their learning environment, because I wanted to see them grow. I wanted to see them become successful. And I've been blessed with the opportunity to follow even my youngest from first grade all the way to his senior year.
Wow.
By being in every classroom that he's ever been, spending 2 to 3 hours a day in those classrooms, in those schools, every day. It's a lot of sacrifice. And it's so worth it. I work at the high school that my children have attended, that my youngest will be graduating from. And I've been here every day with them because I wanted to make sure that they were supported. I wanted to make sure that they knew I was there for them, and that while I've been here, I've tried to provide an example because I want them to do better. I want them to take that example and do better with it by being there, being present in the community, by being present for other people and having hope. COVID is hard for everybody to not be socially connected, to not be physically present in celebrations and ceremonies, but there's a lot that we can do to be more intentful. COVID gave us the opportunity to have more time to reflect on everything, to nurture ourselves, and we have to be intentful. My grandmother was a farmer, and she would always prepare those seeds, even in the wintertime, go through and cleanse them and prepare them for when it was time to plant them. And when she planted them, she was always giving each one individual attention and care. And when they started to bloom and grow, she would go out and she would take care of them. She would feed them and she would talk to them and sing to them. And it gave me guidance and opportunities to say, okay, if she's that intentful with a plant, I can't imagine how she was as a parent to a baby. And I tried to emulate and do the same things, and I'm hoping that my sons, they, as they continue to grow, and if they choose to have children of their own, will do the same thing, and I hope other parents will do that. Everything you speak into the universe becomes intention. So speak wisely, speak purposefully, be intentful with how you speak, what you speak, and the manner in which you speak. Don't raise your voice, because calmness is just as powerful as forcefulness. You could have a hurricane that can come through and totally change your living environment in an instant, but that never stays constant. Calmness, like water, and I live by the Grand Canyon. Calmness over the years has shaped an entire region, and it's permanent. We get to do that with our children. We get to speak with calmness, with intent, with love, with purpose, to guide them, to support them, to give them stability, and to show them how to navigate challenges, changes, heartbreak, hardship, by being calm, by being vulnerable, by being human, by being real. My sons have seen me cry, and they know that I cry because I'm hurt, but they know that it's not something that I do because I'm helpless or wanting to give an example of weakness. It's strength. And so when they cry, they know there's purpose for that, to be cleansing, to be healing, to nurture their heart. And they know now how to show up for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that they have the responsible building blocks of how to be in a relationship with people, not just romantically, not just intimately, but as humans, be in a relationship with people and know how to navigate all of these emotions that we go through. And I only wish I gave that to them sooner. I hope that parents give themselves the opportunity to navigate that. I know that we sometimes will go in our own rooms and our own secluded spaces and cry. Important that our children see that too, to see that we're vulnerable, that we're fallible, but that we all work together to shape a better future, that we all work together responsibly, mindfully, intentfully to, again, be better humans, to be better ancestors.
We have loved everything you have shared with us today. And I truly believe that your transparency and authenticity has changed lives, just as our friends listen to you. Is there a way that we can connect with you, that we can follow your journey, learn from what you do, maybe even volunteer and join in it?
Yes. No, I would love volunteer support. I mean, we participate in so much as a family. My sons choose not to have their own social media, so I have one to kind of help, you know, keep us connected to some of our family that have moved away from, you know, our home communities, and stay connected even in this COVID time, right? So you can find us on social media simply by looking up like Marks in the Sand. That's our, you know, the handle. You can also just reach out and connect with me. My email is marksinthesand@gmail.com. And we have a petition out to stop the desecration and the pain that's being caused to our mountain here, Dokoslid. You know, you can find that by searching for the Indigenous Circle of Flagstaff. We're in consistent advocation for our environment, and so you can even reach out and look for those impacts that are happening in your community and advocate for those. Be vocal, speak out, and, you know, we'll be listening, and hopefully we can find ourselves in those spaces where you're at, so you don't have to come looking for us. We'll come to you. We'll find you, because we're all in this together. We're all on this earth together as human citizens, as human beings, as children of Mother Earth, along with all of our other animals and plants. And everything else that makes this planet beautiful. And so I know that we'll find you and we'll come in contact with you. Please, we're human, we're approachable, and we love to be at service. You know, and like I said, we're here in the Southwest, here in Arizona. We're here in Flagstaff, Arizona, and we're from the Navajo community, so you can always find us there.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Akeha. I appreciate all the time.
I want to thank all of you who make this show possible, who share with us, who listen, who share on social media, who give. We love you, all of you who listen. And in case nobody's told you today, we do love you, and the Creator does too. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back once the world forgets.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com.